comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking The Giver.
I have to give back to the kids. Is that the right movie?
I think so.
Stand and Deliver?
I believe so.
All right.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, konnichiwa.
Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, dive into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other movie topics, including games and other fun stuff like that. This is episode 162.
I mean, I guess we're getting closer to 185.
Very true. Definitely, yes. Definitely not false, that's for sure.
No.
185.
Yeah.
It's in my top 199 favorite numbers. Just say.
I bet I can guess the rest.
You'd be surprised because there's a lot of 6-digit numbers in there. this is episode 162, and we're talking this week about The Giver, the adaptation of the Lois Lowry book from the early 90s, right? I think it's a.
Yeah, I forget when it was.
91?
Written,
sorry, I'm not supposed to talk yet.
No,
you can talk. We just can't identify who you are until 10 seconds after I finish this sentence. But yeah, we're talking about The Giver. It stars Jeff Bridges and Meryl Streep. I'm really just trying to fill for that 10 seconds because I said that. And joining us tonight, we have from Battleship Pretension, riding in on his monochromatic bicycle, it's David Bax.
Thank you for having me. I do have a monochromatic bicycle. It's yellow.
Does it have a banana seat?
No.
Ah, well.
It doesn't.
Can't win it all, I guess. By the way, my goal of those intros is to basically just, rattle the guests so they, so they can't contain themselves, and I feel like I've accomplished that this week. Not every week makes it there, but I feel like I got it. I generally get it with Mark Hoban. He generally takes, a bit, hesitation before he's like, oh, that was pretty good, then he, says something. anyway.
thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you back. We had you on for The World's End last year, and then we had Tyler on for a couple movies, also from Battleship Retention. So of course we want to make sure to keep it even on this podcast. So we figured,
we can't
pick sides.
Yeah, exactly. I try to make
it. Thank you. There are definitely some podcasts that don't take that consideration, and it causes friction.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to upset the balance of Battleship Retention. So I figured, let's keep it together. KIT. Keep it together, and make it work. So,
trademark.
That's from Bowfinger. You can't trademark it.
Make it work is from Project Runway.
We have a few before we continue not talking about movies. I have some announcements. First up, thanks to Shalem. Once we have a new profile pic on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. After Abe and I, met up last week in San Francisco to record an episode, we took a picture together because we only get to see each other so often. And Shalem, he went out of his way and he drew a nice, kind of artistic rendition of that picture. And now it's our profile pic. We're very, very happy about it.
It was really nice. So thank you for that, Shalem.
Yeah, it's a cool. I like his pics. I like what he does. And hold on. I can tell you where to follow him because he is, he is an artist and he does lots of good work. You can follow Shalem on Instagram at Shalem_BenCivenga, BenCivenga. He has lots of his artistic work there. Very cool stuff. He actually has a lot of videos too of him actually drawing some of these things too. So I'll try to put that in the show notes as well. Other things, speaking of last week's episode actually, where Abe and I were live in a movie theater with friend of the show Mark Hoban to talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I want to slightly apologize for the quality of the audio last week. What happened?
Horrible. Yeah.
what happened is basically Abe's microphone is better than I assumed it was, and because I tend to enunciate and be very outspoken and loud, I was getting too close to the microphone, so
right.
it just sounded too good. That was the problem.
It did. Yeah, Mark and I were a little bit farther away. Aaron was quite close to the microphone.
I was close, again. And I speak up. I like to present myself.
So we had the note. Don't worry. We had the note in the Facebook post, like, hey, you know, by the way, the audio sounds a little bit, you know, off this week. It's probably because we're live, but yeah, you know, we tend to try to have really good
audio. The sound of like employees and whatnot, like dumping out 3D glasses and bins next to us and what have you. There was also the I'm talking very loud to make sure you hear me, but this is actually too loud because Abe's microphone's way better than I thought it was. But
give me that. I didn't listen to this episode. I'm sorry because I didn't care to see the movie, but
we did the work.
Tell me
for
about
you.
this on location recording. What theater were you at?
We are up at the Metreon Theater up in San Francisco. The three of us and Mark's friend Ruben, all saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the theater. And then afterwards, because it's a 3-story theater, we wanted to record somewhere. We needed a place that was going to be, you know, quiet but like workable. So we decided to go up the escalator to the third floor, which is basically the exit floor for the IMAX theater, as well as like a place for the staff to kind of come and go to do stuff. And we recorded up there. So we put the laptop on just a kind of the bar area over there, and we all kind of stood around it and recorded a whole episode. Yeah.
And they didn't try to stop you?
No,
came around to see what we were doing, but we weren't doing it. We weren't.
Yeah, we were clearly just in front of in front of a laptop talking. Like there was no reason to. There was no one, like, that theater was currently empty, so, like, there's just no, like, and there's at the top of that theater anyway, the doors are closed, so it didn't really matter. So, yeah, it was just a fun way to record an episode. That was the idea.
Good for them. for letting you go on in peace.
Everybody, yeah, really. We were very curious of that, because they kept kind of walking over,
they're not doing anything. It's like, no.
But anyway, that was a fun episode, but yeah, the audio did have, you know, some rough spots in it, so apologies, but we did have a lot of fun doing it. Hopefully we can do more like that in the future. Ideally with, you know, better audio quality, but we'll see. What else? Coming soon. Not to theater, but to iTunes near you. Probably after this one comes. Maybe I might even put it up tonight. We're going to do a bonus episode for Step Up All In.
Oh, yeah.
Myself and friends of the show, Brandon Peters and Scott Mendelson, we have a weird connection to the Step Up franchise, and because Step Up All In happens to be maybe the best of the series, much like I predicted it would be, because it feels like the Fast Five of the Step Up series. We decided, because it's bombing currently and it deserves to be seen, we want to do a whole mini episode on that film. So that's either out now or it will be out soon. And so stay tuned for that. That should be fun. And the other thing, now to get into that other the other spots of the week, people passed away this week, guys.
They did.
You all know.
It was a shocking week.
Yeah. First up, we had Robin Williams. It's like I have to intro him, like you don't know who he is. Yeah, we had Robin Williams, and then the next day, Lauren Bacall, the golden age screen legend, Lauren Bacall, passed away. So, you know, it's these things happen. We try to address them on the podcast when we can, just because we have respect for, you know, filmmakers in general, but, you know, certainly actors with the kind of stature that they did. And, so I had to throw that out there. Abe, do you have any thoughts on Robin Williams or Lauren Bacall?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly had a lot of thoughts on Robin Williams, and it kind of hit me a little bit later because, you know, I guess you do go through that shock primarily because you see a lot of internet hoaxes these days. You know, people write that somebody has died or something like that, and at first I thought this was a hoax. Unfortunately, it wasn't, and the circumstances of the death were just, you know, they were terrible in general, and I'm very saddened to read about it, but it certainly was one of the situations where this is probably one of the first, I guess, passings, celebrity Hollywood passings that have happened, and in which, you know, I grew up with this character, Robin Williams, or this actor, Robin Williams, in movies that, you know, have been around since I was born, and it was a strange time just to kind of go through and realize that, yeah, he's been around in a lot of things, and I didn't expect this to happen, so again, I was shocked, but I'm sad to hear about it, and I hope that his family's doing well.
David, any thoughts on either?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with, yeah, of course, I mean, sure, I mean, Lauren Bacall's obviously a legend, but I mean, not to be callous about it, but it's a bit less jarring when
she lived a long and very successful life, and you know, if anything, she's back with Bogart now. She's back with her husband. She's back with Bogey.
Right. If you, you know, believe in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously Robin Williams is a big shock because of, you know, how it happened, of course, and also I think there's something incredibly rare about his legacy in that everyone loves at least one or two Robin Williams movies, no matter what their age or background. He did seem to have this universal humanity to him. And I talked about this on Battleship Retention about the idea that Robin Williams was someone that all of my family, you know, I come from a family of, you know, I have three siblings, so there were six of us, you know, my parents and the three siblings and me, and we all seem to be able to, in an unspoken way, agree that we love Robin Williams, and, like, I can sort of, I have all these milestones throughout my childhood and into my adulthood of watching Robin Williams movies with my family, you know, starting with seeing, probably the earliest I remember is seeing Aladdin in the theater with my family, and I saw Jumanji in the theater with my family, and as I got older, I saw, you know, I watched Dead Poets Society with my parents when they decided that I was old enough, even though it's rated PG or whatever, my parents had, you know, some...
too many adult themes in that one, apparently.
Well, and coincidentally, one of them was the fact that there's a suicide in the movie, is something my parents, I think, wanted to shelter me from. Mm-hmm. Later on, getting into his more R-rated movies, I watched Good Will Hunting with my family, and then I won't go into this as much as I did in my podcast, because I don't want to get teary-eyed again, but The Birdcage is a favorite in my family. It was something we could always, like, get together. You know, my mom... one of the, like, maybe eight DVDs that she owns is The Birdcage, and it's something that we could always watch together and always have a great time. And I watched it again this week after he passed on, and it's still... The Birdcage is probably, for various reasons having to do with his performance in the film and the script, but also my history with The Birdcage, is probably my favorite Robin Williams movie.
Yeah, he had an impact on myself as well as, you know, pretty much everybody that he was associated with, just because he was such a talented performer, both in the comedy world and the acting world, and regardless of the style of acting he was doing, whether it be a dramatic performance or a comedic role, he was just very talented and a very entertaining person to watch. And I even, I went through my favorite Robin Williams films. I just watched them this week, and I tend to lean towards Good Morning Vietnam and Good Will Hunting and World's Greatest Dad. I really like a lot. Which also has some very coincidental aspects to it, which are unfortunate. But and it's weird because I think we recently talked about Robin Williams and the movies that I'm not a fan of, and they all kind of happen to star Robin Williams that are from what is technically my childhood that other people seem to like a lot more than I do. And it's like that kind of thing. It doesn't matter just because I have such respect for Robin Williams in general. But it's, you know, yeah. You have, you know, that it's another actor that, you know, you really are fond of that just unfortunately is no longer with us. And, you know, just the idea is to focus on the good and move on from there. So, yeah, that's that. So, now to awkwardly segue into the next thing, let's move on from there. Let's get to know everybody. Each week, Abe and I both have a question that we ask everybody else on the panel and better get to know everybody.
Buddy.
Nailed it. And, moving themes over to the giver this week, I have a question. I'm going to start this one off for you guys. It is, what is the assigned dress code of your utopian society?
Oh, man.
Eddie Murphy Raw suits.
Eddie Murphy Raw suits? That's the first thing. That's my favorite answer you've given to one of my questions in such a long time. Eddie Murphy Raw suits.
Well, I mean, you open a can of worms here because I can be incredibly particular about clothing. But if we're assuming, right, that like in The Giver, we're living in a place where the climate has been controlled now and there are no longer extremes of heat or cold, I'm just going to take that as read because otherwise we're going to have all sorts of different options, you know, for different weather. If we're taking that into consideration, I'm going to say... The everyone has to wear a red and white striped seersucker suit and a straw hat.
Do they have like a cane to go with this too, so they can do impromptu dance
numbers?
Everyone has
to chew on a really long piece of straw.
The only thing I'm picturing right now is Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins when they're like inside the like super.
Corncob pipes.
Corncob pipes. Okay, so it has a southern tint to it as well.
Oh, very much. Yeah.
God.
And you have to grow the Colonel Sanders mustache if you're a man.
Are these seersucker suits or?
Yeah, these are seersucker suits. Okay. Definitely.
What if you have trouble growing facial hair like?
It's a utopian society, Abe. Troubles anywhere.
Phew. Glad.
What if you had troubles? That's on the list of things that can't happen.
My bad.
Yeah, this was a great question. I thought because I love these answers so much.
All right. My question to you guys is, or the audience is, you're in this utopian society. You have freedom of, you know, thought and choice, but you get selected into these groups when you're, you know, 18 years old. Which group would you hate to be in, and which group would you want to be in?
What, like, are there options for these groups?
No, you can just decide. You can decide.
So,
like, I'd hate to be the groundskeeper. Like, I saw that in The Giver, and I was like, man, would that be a fulfilling life?
I feel like when he got that job, though, he was like, fuck. Sorry, I was going to swear. When he got that job, I feel like he was probably like, yes, this is what it's been leading up to. I'm so happy. Give me the rake. Give me the broom. Give me it all. Time to go boom. Like, he started rhyming for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there a job of, like, archivist? Can I be an archivist?
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Historian or archivist?
I think more archivist / librarian is more,
Be like Giles on Buffy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is there a job that's just Giles?
Just the Giles position.
Ripper Giles. Ripper Giles.
Yeah. The Ripper. Yeah, you'd be that good. I mean, pretty much all the menial labor tasks, I would say, are the ones that I wouldn't want to...
The ones that you'd avoid?
Yeah. Or even like one of these like panel members that like has to like sit there and agree with everything. I feel like that'd get pretty boring pretty quick. So I'd probably say no to those things too. I'd probably be more willing to do the labor stuff. Just be like, all right, do that.
At least you get some sun, you know, some air.
Yeah, you know.
So you don't want to be one of the elders on
the
council?
No, I wouldn't want to be an elder. It seems like elders got a rough spot. They either have to go along with the rest of the crowd or like blindly submit. Like it's just that's not my speed.
Hey, I want to be an elder. Only if I get to be specifically Cornel West in the Matrix sequels.
You see, I was thinking if I could be Anthony Zerb in the Matrix sequels. Like, he seemed like he had a good head on his shoulders. He's like, he doesn't sleep because, like, I slept long enough. I'm just chilling down here in the, you know, the machine thing and not knowing how things work. So I'll just talk to Neo instead of consult the guy that knows how this thing works and, you know, kind of fuel my information there. Or I could probably be inserted in the Matrix and just learn it right there. But, you know, whatever.
Right.
Do you think people that are, like, live in Zion, this is a big question, people that live in Zion but have been, like, tapped into the Matrix, have, like, downloaded all this info, do you think they're, like, super smart, just, like, hanging out and talking about these things they learned of each other? Like, hey, guys,
no,
all that
kung
fu.
Only a few select, I think. Like, only ones are like, just like, you know, I'm going to go to the coffee shop and just plug in.
Yeah, like, it's, like, if, like, this summer the World Cup happens, and I'd be like, oh, like, now I would, like, get on Wikipedia if I was, like, oh, interested in the World Cup. Whereas if I lived in Matrix times, I could just learn everything you ever would want to know about the history of the World Cup and be an expert right then. It's their Wikipedia, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you think they go down the rabbit hole? Like people talk about getting lost and like following links and getting lost in Wikipedia. Do you think in that they just like jack into one thing after another and before you know it, they're the smartest person in the world, but they haven't eaten in a week and a half?
That's what it seems like, right? Like Neo, when he first jacked in, he was like there for like 8 hours straight learning just martial arts moves. Like it seems like he was just like into it. Like he needed all that info.
What would be really annoying is if like you're just plugging in one day and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, by the way, we'd love a donation until you can't really read this article until you donate. It's like, oh man, the Matrix sucks.
Maybe it'd be like a if it was, I guess it's more dystopian than utopian then, I guess, in the Matrix, but it'd be like one of those mech drivers. They seem to, you know, have fun like walking around in mechs in Zion, but then you're in Zion, so it's like all you're eating is runny eggs and not having much fun.
Can I we like just, runny eggs.
Can we just continue this know everybody conversation forever? Well, Abe, you did open it up to the listeners, so do you have a live call-in section, apparently, or something?
I do.
Beep, boop, boop, beep, beep, beep. Hurry, I just wanted to answer the question. Okay, we can finish that one.
I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, I think we've sufficiently gotten to know everybody, so let's move on. Nailed that one, too, this week. Oh, man, time to talk about more movies. Let's do a little Out Now Cookies.
Yep.
Each week on Out Now, we have a main movie of the week, but we always have other movies that we see during the week that we have something to talk about. Cookies.
Yep.
Okay. Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
Pass.
You know what? We don't clarify this enough for like new listeners, but it's because it always generally seems like Abe doesn't see anything else. What's happening? You're very busy every week, right, Abe?
I am quite busy every week, primarily because of I do work at a startup, so it's quite busy. Primarily because of, you know, changes in the atmosphere all the time.
Okay, so yeah, that's just to clarify why Abe doesn't generally always.
I'm sorry.
That he's seen.
You work at a startup or at a Starbucks?
I do. No, a startup. The latter.
Okay, not a Starbucks.
Not a coffee shop, no.
No, yeah, not a coffee shop.
That's probably pretty busy, too.
No, quite busy, I'm sure. Sure. Yeah, I'm sure that it's very physically demanding, I'm sure.
I salute any of the baristas that listen to this podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for accepting that. That's how you
do it. No, I'm also saying thank you to all the baristas that listen to our podcast.
Got it. Moving on. David, have you seen any other movies this week?
Yeah, a couple things. I've undertaken a long-term project. I'm not putting any sort of expediency on this at all. But I have, for years, been talking about how I am not a big fan of James Bond movies. But yeah. It also occurred to me that I've actually seen very few of them. So maybe I should put my money where my mouth is and learn to and expose myself to more James Bond movies. So I did watch Goldfinger this week, which is considered one of the best, and I didn't really like it. So I guess I'm... a few weeks ago I watched From Russia with Love, and I actually really liked that. I would say From Russia with Love is not my favorite James Bond movie, which is not a very high bar because I'm not a fan. But I watched Goldfinger, and I didn't like it. What's that?
Are you going in order or just kind of?
Yeah, chronological order.
Okay. Yes.
And I had seen Dr. No, so I watched From Rush with Love a few weeks ago. I watched Goldfinger this week. And I started Thunderball, but I got kind of interrupted about an hour in, so I haven't finished Thunderball. But the other thing I've been doing that I do usually in the summer when there are fewer things on TV and fewer movies that I care about because I'm a snob. I go back to like recent years. I go to like the screeners that I have from recent years and try to catch up on some stuff that I missed. And I watched a couple things. I watched a documentary called Don't Stop Believin', which is about Arnel Pineda, the Filipino guy who became the new singer in Journey, which is a fascinating story. It's a decent documentary. It's a little on the like fan service side. It's for Journey fans, but it's Arnel Pineda is a really interesting guy. And then I watched an amazing Italian movie called Reality from Matteo Garrone, I think is his name, the guy who made Gomorrah.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if you saw Reality, but it's...
I know Gomorrah. I'm a big fan of Gomorrah.
So Reality is about a guy who becomes obsessed with trying to get onto Big Brother and kind of ruins his life and goes insane. And it's kind of like it's... the performance is... The lead actor, by the way, is also currently serving a life prison for murder, I think. And I guess the Italian prison system works different because he would like get day passes and spend the day making a movie and then go back to prison at night, which I don't think is something you can do here.
No.
So that's fascinating on its own. The movie itself is this harrowing picture of insanity, but also it's really funny. Like there's a part where there's a cricket loose in this guy's house and he becomes... This is never outright stated, but you realize that he thinks the cricket is like some sort of device sent by the Big Brother people with a camera that's watching him. And so there's just these like long shots of him staring at this cricket and like half smiling because he thinks he's on camera. It's a crazy movie that it's so good.
Sounds good.
Yeah, Reality is like the best thing.
Yeah, it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I see it now on that. I'm adding it to my queue here.
So that's what I watched.
Great. All right. I've seen because I'm trying to do one, but there's two other movies came out this week, and one of them we were possibly going to talk about, but we decided on The Giver, so I'll talk about that one. Let's talk about The Expendables 3. This is, of course, the third entry in the Expendables franchise, which has not exactly excited me since seeing the first Expendables, but here we are. We have another one, and it's not very good. It continues to have all the ingredients you need to make a classic 80s action movie, except that you can't really make a classic 80s action movie now and attempt to, you know, easily capture whatever you consider the magic that made those movies at least watchable. The Expendables 3 is not unwatchable. It's maybe the most fun of the three movies to an extent, but the main problem is the action. If you want to go see a movie that features all these action stars, you figured, hey, I hope that has great action in it, and it doesn't. The director, Patrick Hughes, who did the Australian film Red Hill, which I am actually a big fan of, whether it's because he was catering to the PG-13 crowd or just because he was out of his depth on how to put this kind of movie together, it just feels like a really rushed editing job to put all this together but not really give you much scope or satisfaction in what's being communicated in these action sequences. Like, there's like the giant, like the finale is like this 25-minute action finale that in, you know, concept is cool, but watching it's just like this mess of like people running all over the place in a building that's like maybe blowing up soon, and there's bombs everywhere and tanks are shooting at it, and there's CG explosions and MMA moves because all these MMA fighters or all these young kids are there doing MMA, and it's like, all right, there's a jumble of things happening. I sometimes understand what that is, but overall it's not all that impressive, especially in a year where we have The Raid 2, among other action movies that have been quite impressive, given, you know, the talents of the direction right. involved or the editors or just the freedom to do what they want as opposed to make a movie that can hopefully be rated PG-13.
So, question.
Yeah.
Is there a character that you wish you had seen more of on the screen because they were basically like stealing the show, or, you know, they just did a really good job?
Not necessarily more of, but I will say Antonio Banderas is easily the highlight of the entire film. There's plenty of him in it, so like it's not like I needed more. It's probably the right amount, actually, because there'd probably be too much of him if there's more in it. But he plays this kind of fast-talking former Spanish military mercenary guy, and like he's just hilarious. Like, he's hilarious, and he's also the saddest character in the movie based on why he is the character he is, which is kind of fascinating, but again, it's in a movie where it's just not, yeah, it's based on kind of the circumstances that got him to where he is, and a mix of the kind of the semblance of commentary Stallone's trying to make in terms of seeing aging action stars being thrown out and new action stars being brought in. Like, there's some ideas there, but they're just not cashed in on, and because the action isn't good, it's just kind of a double loss. So, The Expendables 3 is bombing in theaters currently, so you can go see that if you want to.
Thanks.
It is. Like, it's made.
Yeah, no.
I believe it made almost less than half what the second Expendables made to a couple years ago when that came out. So, clearly.
You know, yeah. Lionsgate or whatever is just going to blame that on the fact that the movie.
On the piracy thing, so. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, like, yeah, good. Go for that. Go for that angle. See if that works for you. So, yeah, that's on our quickies.
Yeah.
Let's move on now. Let's get to our movie trailer talk, where each week we talk about a new trailer that's recently arrived and what we thought of it, when it's coming out, what have you. And this week we have the trailer for Unbroken. This is, of course, the adaptation of the memoir, I believe, right?
I think it's a biography.
It's a biography, not a memoir. The biography. By Laura Hillenbrand about, what's the guy's name? That's Zamperini. I was like, Z something. Louis Zamperini, who went through some crazy stuff in his life, and there's a big whole book written about it, and now that book's been adapted by the Coen brothers, no less. They had a hand in the screenplay, among others. And the film was directed by Angelina Jolie. And it features, I wouldn't say it's a giant, huge name cast, but... you have Jai Courtney, who has ruined many movies recently. You have Domhnall Gleeson, who is in About Time. And you have Garrett Hedlund, who makes no impression in Tron Legacy, among other people, including a newish guy, Jack O'Connell, who plays Zamperini, the, you know, title character. Or not even, it's not even in the title. He was Unbroken, though. With all that in mind.
His name is Unbroken?
His name's Lewis,
like,
Unbroken.
Like Jaws the Shark?
Jaws, yeah, that's what they called it. Remember when Robert Shaw was like, there's Jaws. but yeah, it's a biopic. It's a World War II drama. With all that in mind, David, what'd you think of the trailer for Unbroken?
Well, I made the mistake of watching it 48 hours ago, and I have forgotten almost everything about it because that's the kind of trailer it is. I didn't know the Coen brothers had a hand in the screenplay, and that gives me some hope. But I thought it was a very by-the-numbers trailer. I don't want to judge a movie by its trailer, so I don't know if the movie is that sort of thing. But the trailer itself did not do anything to excite me for the movie at all.
Abe?
I'm curious about it primarily because it's a biography, and I enjoy reading many a biography. But I'm curious to see what the experience in the Japanese POW camp would be, and I guess I'm curious to see how Angelina Jolie will have what her visionary style is going to include. So coming out Christmas Day, that's a pretty big date to have a movie come out. So I guess that they're putting a lot of eggs in this basket, and if they are and they have confidence in it, then great. Otherwise, I hope it's just – I mean, Aaron and I weren't huge on Les Mis, and that also came out Christmas Day, but apparently like we were in the minority on that.
I think we weren't in the minority on that. The eggs in the basket, is, I think it leans more towards the fact that Unbroken's a very popular book, and Angelina Jolie's, of course, a very high-profile persona, and those two things mixed with, you know, period drama equal giant holiday release to both make the money and to potentially get the Oscars nominations or what have you. With that said, this does kind of look like a movie that's designed more to cater to the Oscar bait is what I'm gleaning at. And I don't necessarily like to use that term all the time, but this movie really kind of emphasizes what that means, I think. I mean, you have the story of a man who was in a war, who was in lost at sea, who was in a prisoner, who then broke out of that prison and was never broken. Like, that's exactly the movie that you're saying, man, how many awards is that going to get? Because that has everything in it that you want from these movies. With that in mind, yeah, the Coen brothers having a hand in the screenplay, that does pique my, that, you know, helps it a bit. The book is excellent. So, I mean, that is a thing about it too.
Oh, you've read it?
Yeah, I have read it. I mean,
check it out.
It's a pretty fantastic story. So it's like, yeah, this would be something I'd want to see, I guess, given if we're, you know, adapting books, like this is a pretty incredible, you know, story since it's, you know, true. That's something that kind of, it's a true story that kind of fits the cinematic capabilities, I guess. With that said, yes, I agree with David that the trailer doesn't do much for me in terms of, it just kind of more or less tells me, oh, this exists. So I can only hope that it, you know, plays better than the kind of lauding that the trailer is going for in its, you know, initial form. So we'll see how that goes. Unbroken, of course, as you said, Abe, opens on Christmas Day, and I'm sure we'll probably have some pre-release stuff going on before that as well. But yeah, so there's that. Let's move on now. Let's get to our main review, guys. We've done a lot of BSing up to this point, apparently. let's get to our main review for The Giver.
Do you get to fly to the edge?
Oh yeah.
What's past there?
Don't know. We're not allowed to fly past that.
Let's go.
It's against the rules, Jonas.
They're called books.
Hello? My name...
I know who you are.
Who are you?
The Giver. When the elders need guidance, I provide wisdom using memories of the past. Our world was different. There was more.
More?
Much more.
All right, so that should have been some of the trailer for The Giver. The Giver is based on the 1993 Lois Lowry novel, not related to Detective Mike Lowry from Bad Boys, of course. But this
is that confirmed?
I think so. I think it might be cleared up in Bad Boys 3.
Mike Lowry.
Anyway, this film is based on a book that depicts a futuristic society that's been stripped away of pretty much all personality, literally leaving people devoid of color in an attempt to keep the darker ways of the past behind them. Brenton Thwaites is Jonas, the one chosen to receive the world's memories from the Giver, played by Jeff Bridges, who has all the secrets of the world. With that process in the works, Jonas begins to realize the flaws in this supposedly perfect society. With all that said, David, have you read the book The Giver?
I was a huge fan of this book as a kid.
Okay, and what are your thoughts on the film?
I need maybe a few days for the wounds to heal, but it is currently residing at the very bottom of my list of 2014 movies.
That's where
it stands.
You can go a bit more on that.
I don't want to get into the whole review yet until everyone's had something to say, but it didn't feel anything like the world that I remembered from the book. I think everything felt. I wonder if there is or was like a director's cut somewhere, because the movie feels incredibly rushed to me. It feels like it's holding your hand the whole time. It doesn't trust you to understand the emotion behind any of this. Everything is explained to you and then explained again with a complete lack of heart or emotion. And then there's a spaceship thing for some reason, or a flying drone craft thing. Like, I wouldn't have liked this even if I hadn't read the book, I don't think. I just think it's a poorly assembled movie, which is a surprise from Philip Noyce. Even if I didn't like the movie, I would have expected it to be of sturdy construction with him behind the camera. But I think it pretty much failed on every level.
Abe?
I did read the book way back when, probably like in fourth grade or something. I don't remember any of it, and when I saw the trailer for this, I was thinking, I don't remember spaceships in this book, and I also don't remember, like, this future society where, I guess all this technology has advanced. But I kind of just went in with it anyway, and I was kind of surprised, because I guess I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but I did like this film. Not to say that I loved it, I think that it has its merits, is what I should say. So I think that they were trying to do something that was... I guess I appreciate what they were trying to do, which is tell this story of, hey, like, you know, there's a lot more to life than just having no emotion and draining it all out. It's a story that you've seen time and time again, and I guess that this one is just based off of this property from 1983, so that's what makes it a little bit more interesting than something that's more current, like Divergent or something like that. I think the thing that really kind of... made it so interesting is just the montage sequences, which is kind of like an out if you consider it. Just
like the giver stuff, like the actual giving process. Or?
Not the giving, but yeah, sort of. But not the sequences in which there's an extended period in which, you know, he's learning about dance or music or whatever else. But stuff like, hey, let me give you the courage, and then flash sequence, and it's just all these like moving images of like Nelson Mandela and everything else. And it's like, well, that's kind of like a cheat, but at the same time, like, yeah. I appreciate that.
I found that to be a real cheat, to the point where it kind of I felt almost insulted by it, that they're leaning on some pretty horrific footage, you know, Vietnam footage and, you know, an elephant being killed and all this, yeah. All this stuff. Like, they're borrowing all this emotion that they haven't earned, in my point of view, by using this real footage.
Yeah, and that's something that I was questioning too, which is, I wonder where you get the motivation to use this. You know what I mean? Like where's the issue that comes up? Like, what's the problem besides this dystopian society, perfect utopian, dystopian, whatever you want to call it, society in which, you know, there's none of this, so that no fears and no qualms can ever be made. And but for the most part, again, I didn't really know what to expect, and so I did enjoy it, but again, there were flaws in it, just because how do you carry around a very young person through a desert for like 6 months or something like that? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's the passage of time in this. That's just one of the like the kind of thing you could write off if it were a good movie. Otherwise, you'd end up nitpicking stuff. But like, his training with the giver is at one point referred to like it's been going on for like a year by the end of the movie. But this baby, Gabriel, hasn't aged at all. That's ridiculous. And then who knows how long he's walking through all this terrain outside of the community. And why doesn't this baby age? It would be a nitpick in another movie, but it drove me crazy because I didn't have good stuff to focus on.
I honestly can't remember if I've read The Giver or not, because I feel like I knew a lot about the book going in, but I can't remember like the writing style of Lowry. So I had no way to be like, did I read this? I had no like answer to that question. So I basically walked in fresh, despite knowing kind of what was going to happen in the movie, which is a weird place to come in at it. With that said, I'm kind of with Abe, where I didn't know what to expect, and I ended up enjoying parts of it. To an extent, because I did find, like, flaws aside, I thought, like, Bridges
who apparently is very like into this book and really wanted to get this movie made. Like he was a producer on everything. Like he was somewhat instrumental. Like I thought he did a fine job at what he was going for this movie.
It's red, just like her hair.
Yes, it's red, green, blue, many different colors. But our people, they chose to do away with all of them. They created sameness. If we were different, we could be envious, angry, consumed with hatred. We need sameness, don't you think?
Oh, I completely agree. It's still, it's also beautiful.
Were you at the Comic-Con panel for The Giver?
I was not, no.
Yeah, he talks about it. There's somewhere he has a videotape that he made as like a test at home with...
Interesting.
With like a 12-year-old, because in the book the kid is 12.
Yeah.
So from like the mid-90s, he made this video as a test with a 12-year-old, with his father Lloyd Bridges playing The Giver, and with Bud Cort reading narration straight from the book.
Huh.
I would love to see that.
Same here.
I hope that's on the unrated DVD.
It's on the Blu-ray extras.
The too hot for theaters edition of The Giver.
But here's. As someone with a even though I haven't read it since probably middle school, it stuck with me. So someone with a little more memory of the book, I was not on this movie's side from the very beginning. Because first off, you start with a couple of title cards explaining
exactly what the world is.
What's happened.
Yeah.
And then immediately you get voiceover re-explaining what you just read on the title cards. And I feel like up until... the first time that The Giver gives Jonas some memories, which is the sledding memory, there's – and that's got to be almost 25 minutes into the movie. There's almost no gap in dialogue between voiceover and dialogue. For more than 20 minutes, they are constantly talking as a way of setting up what everything is. Whereas in the book – there's no prologue, there's no explanation. You have to learn over the course of the book what this society is and what may have happened. Just by being immersed in it. That's one of the major differences right from the beginning, and I think really informs why I dislike this movie, because it felt so hand-holding and it felt so untrusting of its audience.
It feels like a Dark City scenario where they added narration into that movie to better get you acquainted with what was going on from the get-go, which unfortunately compromises what some of the movie's trying to do. And I agree with you that it is weird. Like, there's so many weird things about this movie that do feel like either studio tinkering or that... or just unsureness of how to handle this. But yeah, it is a Philip Noyce movie, and I think he knows his way around making a movie at this point. So my low expectations came from the fact that this is, you know, a mid-August release of a major, you know, YA novel. And the last time we had that, well, beyond the many times we've had YA novel adaptations, like last year we had the Mortal Instruments, City of Bones or whatever.
City of Bones, right.
And that's like exactly this movie again, where you just, you know, you have this popular YA novel with a young cast and random like big actors also in it, coming out at no real time of year that, you know, generally makes a lot of money for these movies, unless it has, you know, Hunger Games in the title. And it feels like this movie that just kind of sits there, which is probably my main issue with it. Like, I was able to get past a lot of the kind of some logic gaps and weird suspension of disbelief involving the setup of this world and what have you, just because I was enjoying Bridges. I liked Brenton Thwaites, who Abe and I, we both like in The Signal quite a bit.
Yeah.
There was things about it that I admire. Like, I like the kind of the look of this world, the way they're playing with color and playing with kind of characters acting like robots, which is essentially what they are. Some did it better than others, I would say. But yeah, it does feel like a movie that's like kind of derivative, mainly because we've seen this story a lot in other forms, regardless of when this book came out versus when other movies or books were written and then turned into movies. I mean, it just feels like another addition to this kind of idea of a chosen one emerging from a utopian society and finding out that there's something bad going on in that society. Like, there's nothing really special about that story anymore.
That's such a shame to me that it feels, because you're right, it does feel derivative of all this stuff, even though the source material
predates
is
a
like
lot of that stuff.
It's the forefather of all this stuff.
Yeah, like there's certainly there was like some kind of 70s sci-fi that came to mind, but yeah, movies like a movie like Equilibrium, for example, feels like exactly directly inspired by like The Giver, or even Divergent from earlier this year feels like another one that comes, you know, it's down to having a female author of a sci-fi utopian world, like it's just all that kind of comes to mind.
Some of the technical aspects that you had talked about earlier too. I mean, I just want to add on that I liked actually some of the cinematography in the opening sequences when it's still black and white. I thought some of the shots were actually really nice. They were just really framed well. And then as the color comes in, you kind of mix in, I guess, whatever else. But I thought that some of the opening stuff was really good. Up to the point where he's actually just where Brenton is looking at the clouds because he's been given some information already.
This is, and so there's another thing that I don't know if this comes from my thoughts on what I knew about the book or whatnot, but I don't know how much this book lends itself to a movie, which is my other issue with it. Like it feels like the arc of this movie is very simple when you kind of break it down, and it feels like there. So it's weird to think there's more of this movie that could exist. Like there's a like this movie's like what 93 minutes or something without credits. Like if there's like an extended cut, it's like what else could be there beyond shaping these characters more, making you know some of the stuff that David you've talked about, like making that feel kind of more fleshed out and earned, while taking away some of the narrate. Like it's.
Well, I think what could be there is the non-story stuff. I think one of the problems I had is this movie doesn't take its time in the world. You know, there's this phrase that has become popular of world building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel like this movie, The Giver, is so self-conscious in its world building, where it's almost more like it's world like telling all the time, like it's constantly telling you what the world is. What I would have liked to have seen is for the movie to relax a bit and take its time in this world. And, you know, it goes back to what I talked about with there being almost no gap in people talking for the first 25 minutes of the movie. I don't get any sense of the atmosphere. And the thing you, Abe, were talking about the early cinematography in the movie, on its own, I actually really like a lot of the choices made there too, because as opposed to something like The Hunger Games, which feels very contemporary, the approach to the cinematography in the early black and white sequences is kind of classical and old fashioned. It's a throwback the way some of this stuff is framed,
mm-hmm. Which I think comes down to the budget too. Like it's a much smaller movie than some of these bigger, because it's like I think it's like a $20-30 million movie compared to like Hunger
Games. Wow.
Yeah, compared to like Hunger Games, which has you know like $100 million
like
thrown at it.
Yeah.
But on its own, I like a lot of those choices, but then when you've got this nonstop dialogue that bothered me, it's not very good dialogue because so much of it is expositional. And also, I think the cast is almost uniformly not good. Even actors I normally like Jeff Bridges and Meryl Streep, I really didn't like, and everything felt so rushed to me.
I'm curious about that because the world building part, and I'm wondering if it's maybe because we've seen like audiences across America or the world have seen so many of these movies where like this dystopian future, and you know the reason why the world is this way is because of the same exact reasons in this movie. So there's no reason to have us spend screen time to make you understand what this world is about.
Well, that's making unfair assumptions of your audience, though. Yeah, it's one thing to like to not show like a superhero backstory because you're familiar with it so often from seeing it, but there's another reason it's another thing to assume that audiences are familiar with futuristic societies because they've seen other futuristic societies. Like
that's a good point.
I think it is telling you a lot about this world while also rushing through it at the same time, just because it seems either like it's been chopped up a lot or it just didn't have the right script going into it or whatnot. Like while I do like see things about it that I enjoyed, I do find some very obvious flaws in the movie, and I can agree on that for sure.
What would you guys recommend about it, because you both liked it more than I did? What would you say are its strong points?
Because you didn't like the performances. I would say I do think that Bridges, I was going to say Quaid, Bridges and Thwaites do a good job for what they're doing. I think Brenton Thwaites in particular as Jonas, I think there's a tricky balance to find between playing a character that's been stripped of personality to an extent and then discovering you know, more about the world, and in turn his character builds from that. I wouldn't say it's a perfect performance, or, you know, one of the best of these young acting performances of these kind of movies, but I did find myself invested in his character despite other issues around him. And because that's the driving force of the film, he's in every scene, essentially. Like, I responded to that positively.
I think one of the things that I really liked about it is just the appreciation of life, and that's it's much more of a from a step back perspective. Again, I did enjoy those montage sequences. I just thought that they were just strangely placed in a movie that has main actors and characters and whatever else. It reminds me of that one, A Life in a Day, that where they just put together a bunch of YouTube videos, and then it showed you the life in a day of the world. And I appreciate that a lot, primarily because it's just, there's a lot to see in the world, and I hope that people do get out and check it out. And there's just so much to learn.
I think that I had so little anticipation of this movie that also held quite a bit. I really did not.
Very true.
I really did not find myself thinking, man, I hope The Giver's going to be good. I just thought, man, I hope Meryl Streep isn't worse than Kate Winslet was in Divergent, because, man, they really seem to be competing against each other. This movie, while I wouldn't say Meryl Streep's giving a revelatory performance either, I do think she's fine for what she's given. I think Alexander Skarsgård has, like, some of the better moments in this movie. I think
just off this facial expression.
In terms of kind of the way this world's being depicted and, like, what goes on in it, I feel like the stuff that they give, he plays Jonas's father, I think the stuff that they give him is maybe a little manipulative, but at the same time, I think he effectively does what's required of him. And there's just...
Yeah, I would, if I had to say something nice about the movie, which I don't think I've done yet, I would withdraw when I said I didn't like the cast. I think Alexander Skarsgård and even Katie Holmes are doing a good job of transmitting what people would be like who had grown up to adulthood in this world.
And it's like, it's little touches like that made it work for me. And I also, something about the idea of a movie like this not ending on like a, even though it does have kind of inserted action in it to an extent, it's more adventurous stuff than action, but in having kind of a lot of these YA movies end in these kind of big, you know, giant finale, action finales with, you know, big stakes and whatnot and lots of repercussions and people dying. This movie doesn't really have that. It feels like it's a lot more focused on a thing, regardless of if you like that thing or not, or you like how it's got there at that point. I think it, for a movie, instead of being, you know, a 2.5 hour movie that has all these loose ends, it feels like it's a wrapped up package. And there's something like about that.
I mean,
felt
refreshing. There's still questions that I still have, though, I mean, regarding what happens later. But I agree that there
are sequels to the books, which I've never read.
But there are more books.
But I do agree with Aaron. It's like, yeah, it's not like this giant action sequence like Divergent, and it's like, oh, you know, by the way, one of ours was taken, so we've got to go out into the fields and get him back. It's just like, no, it ends where it ends because they've, for all
it ends where it ends. That's why, yeah,
solved. Right. Yeah, they've solved everything that they needed to solve.
It's not like this movie, you know, begs for a sequel anyway, or let alone these movies in general make me think, man, I can't wait to see the next one. But in terms of what it's doing, I felt like I got a complete package, which was refreshing, really, honestly.
I think you could make a good sequel without giving away spoilers about how it ends, you know, but things change at the end.
Yeah.
And I think you could make a good sequel about people who want the conflict between people who are embracing these new changes and people who want things to go back to the way they were. That could be a really interesting story.
Well, it's like compared to a movie like Ender's Game, which I liked quite a bit. Abe and I both liked quite a bit.
I liked it a lot, yeah.
I think one of the flaws of that movie is the ending, where it does leave you literally with kind of a, okay, so now what? Like, it doesn't give you much to go on at the end there, especially because it, you know, didn't do well, so it's probably not going to get a sequel. So something like this was like a nice change in a different direction. And that, along with, you know, some of the cinematography stuff that Abe's mentioned and what I appreciated about some of these performances, I mean, there are little aspects like that that made a movie that I was expecting to probably hate, it made it worthwhile to me. That's where I come down to it in terms of why I would not necessarily, like, say, man, you got to go see this movie, but, you know, I wouldn't divert people away from it either.
Or diverge.
I was trying to make that. I couldn't figure out how to make that joke work.
I was trying to make it work too. Good on all of us.
So, anything else on The Giver, or we move on?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Then let's get to our rating then. Basically, my question now, David, is when or should people go see this movie?
I would say to save your time and your money.
Abe?
I'd say, yeah. I mean, Dollar Theater would be fine.
Yeah, I think you could wait for the HBO premiere of The Giver. I think you can do that just fine. Watch it in, you know, HD or whatnot. Anyway, all right, let's move on now. Let's get to movie Callback.
Callback.
This is, of course, where we discuss some movies that we might have thought of during or after the main film of the week, which is, of course, The Giver. And, David, any movies come to mind when you're watching The Giver?
Somebody else go first, because I forgot about this part of the
show. Yeah, no problem. Abe?
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about Divergent, The Matrix, Tron, and that Simpsons episode where they all have to wear uniforms, and then their life gets sucked out until it starts raining because the... Because the uniforms are not color fast.
Oh, that one. Oh, okay.
First, I thought down about, with homework.
I thought you were talking about the cult episode first, but no, yeah, I get what you're saying. Man, that spin-off Simpsons podcast we do one day is going to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have Equilibrium. I mentioned a lot of other books. Divergent and True Grit came to mind just because of what
Bridges was bringing.
What Bridges is bringing. David, any thoughts now?
I would mention, this seems kind of superficial, but I thought of Pleasantville a lot because that's also a movie that uses the gradual introduction of color, and I would say uses it much better. I mean, Pleasantville definitely has its flaws, but at least Pleasantville's flaws come from it being overly ambitious, whereas I think The Giver's flaws come from it being... a little bit short-sighted. I thought of Rabbit Proof Fence, which is a movie, I think a much better movie that Philip Noyce made with child actors than this one, and with younger child actors like The Giver novel should have been. And then here's one kind of jokey one. Did either of you see They Came Together, the David Wayne movie?
I did, and I'm a big fan of it. I've been trying to champion it for months.
It's my favorite movie of 2014 so far.
Really?
I love it.
Oh,
I
my God.
It.
It's so funny.
But there's a running joke where they describe the passage of time through different holidays.
Yeah.
And then every time the new scene starts, you hear people saying, like, off screen, saying things like, it's Halloween. It's Halloween, you know, New Year's Eve. Like, it's a really corny thing. And there's a part in The Giver where one of the memories he shares is of a wedding, like a medieval time, like medieval wedding. And you literally hear someone say, beautiful wedding.
Yeah, that movie is wonderful.
Yeah. So those are the movies I thought of.
Great, Philip Noyce, by the way, I generally like him. So it's a shame this movie isn't better.
Other than like Quiet American and Rubber Proof Fence, is like more personal stuff. What Philip Noyce movies do you like?
Dead Calm, I really like, with Sam Neill and Billy Zane and Nicole Kidman. Clear and Present Danger, I think, is a terrific action movie. One of the better careers. One of the better moves that Harrison Ford's had post, you know, not including, you know, his, you know, geek roles. I think The Saint is underrated, you know, with Val Kilmer. I thought that was a solid one. And yeah, Rabbit Proof Fence. Was it the Quiet American? One with Michael Caine. Yeah. And I like Salt quite a bit. I think Salt.
I didn't see Salt.
I think Salt is a very efficient action movie with stakes that surprised me going into it. It felt like an old fashioned. Kind of action movie that happened to have Angelina Jolie in a modern action role. But, I mean, for the most part, I do like what Philip Noyce has to offer as a director.
I compared, in my written review on BattleshipRetention.com, I talked about The Bone Collector, mm-hmm. which is also not a good movie.
No.
But
no,
again, has this sheen of professionalism and competence to it that I think The Giver was missing. The Bone Collector at least moves forward, like, it progresses like a real movie. You know, made by professionals, whereas this felt so slapped together in so many ways.
Yeah, it makes me curious if there is some kind of behind the scenes stuff that happened that made The Giver, that compromised the quality of The Giver, I would say, or whatnot. Yeah, it is a Weinstein company.
It's because they went for that PG-13 rating. Just like Expendables 3, they should have gone for the R.
Really get all that that extra content. And they're like, that's the thing, though. It's just like, I don't know what else there is. In terms of quality, like, there's issues.
Yeah,
there,
I honestly couldn't tell you what
else there could be more in it. Like,
right.
What,
I don't remember the source material, so that's why I was like, I can't remember how this book goes or what its meaning or how I felt about it after reading it when I was 9.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's get to our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. And you, the listeners of Out Now with Aaron and Abe, you can find a free audio book at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can download a free audiobook there. You can check out the service for 30 days. Have the opportunity. If you don't like it, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book that you downloaded. And speaking of books, I have one to recommend. It is called Messenger, which is by Lois Lowry and narrated by David Morse. 6 years, a little synopsis. 6 years earlier, Matty had come to a village as a scrappy and devious little boy. Back then, he liked to call himself the fiercest of the fierce. But since that time, Matty has grown almost into a man under a care of Seer, a blind man whose special sight has earned him the name. Now Matty hopes that he will soon be given his true name, and he hopes it will be Messenger. But strange changes are taking place in the village. It's not a direct sequel to The Giver. I think it's more of a companion novel to The Giver, but it is by Lois Lowry. And that is just one of the many books you can find at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Again, you can download a book, check out the service. If you don't like it, you get to keep the book anyway, even after giving up the service. So, be a winner. Read or listen.
Yay.
All right, let's get to our feedback section.
Feedback, feedback, feedback!
We have a lot of feedback this week, Abe. We have
of feedback.
A lot of listeners that really wanted to help out and contribute their answers to the various questions we've asked on Facebook.com/outnowpodcast. So let's go into those right now.
Let's do it. David, if you have an answer, feel free to shout it out as well. First question we asked was your favorite Jeff Bridges role or movie. Alan, friend of the show, Alan writes The Fisher King. Corey writes Tron and Tron Legacy.
Both Trons, huh?
Yeah. Justin writes Tron for sure. The best would have been the dude. I always liked him in K-Pax, The Fisher King, and Starman.
I actually, I wrote on the Facebook page for this question to make the kind of exclude Lebowski if you wanted to, which is why Lebowski's not going to come up as often as one would.
As often, yeah. Right. Philip writes True Grit. Jason, he just wrote everything here. He wrote Tron, True Grit, Baker Boys, R.I.P.D.
The one man.
Starman. Starman and King Kong, also
King
the
King
view.
Kong.
But me and Sam Elliott wishes he wouldn't curse so much. He personally knows Sam Elliott. Joe writes original Tron and Barney Cousins in The Vanishing. Okay. Philip writes, go ahead and hate, but Iron Man. And, you know, hey, it's your opinion.
I wouldn't have to hate. He's fine in Iron Man.
Scott writes, it really doesn't matter what role he starred in or will star in. I'd say his role as the dude is the one and only that would always be associated with him. Such an iconic part.
Okay.
Yeah, the dude is the first one I thought of. I'm surprised no one said The Last Picture Show. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's like his breakout, right?
Yeah. And then, I would second the person who said The Fabulous Baker Boys. I'm a big fan of that movie.
Cool. All right, next question. I like this question quite a bit. If you had a level of knowledge that you could pass on to someone, what would that knowledge be? Larry writes, something will come my way. Scott has, the universe is a weird place, embrace the weirdness. Leah has, in her best Jeff Goldblum, life finds a way. Dennis has, there is no spoon. James has, how to get the VCR to stop blinking 12. VHS will write again. Jason has, the knowledge of the dude. Lane has, make sure you see Clue. That's a weird one.
And all three of its endings.
Eric has, there is nothing I could pass on that would be more valuable than experiencing it for yourself, except a sandwich.
It's a good one.
Good answers, that one. I like that.
Very existential. Our next question is, Brenton Thwaite stars in The Giver and Out Now fave The Signal. Who are some other up-and-coming actors that people like? Jason writes Chris Pratt and Michael B. Jordan. Trevor writes Elizabeth Olsen. And lastly, Philip has Elle Fanning and Ty Sheridan.
David, do you have any younger actors that you're looking at?
Yeah, these have to be young actors.
Well, I guess.
You know who I liked a lot is this guy. Is his name Frank Grillo?
Yeah,
from the Frank Purge Grillo. Anarchy.
Yeah.
I hope he gets more.
He's been in like really small roles here and there. Aaron, we've kept him on our Out Now with Aaron and Abe radar.
So since Warrior.
Yeah.
Hardy and oh my God.
And Moses's brother himself.
Ramses.
I forget his name too.
Oh my God, and he wrote
I'm trying to not look it up.
he wrote those movies that I like. Joel Edgerton. There we go.
Yes. Yeah.
Killing me.
Her confidence.
Also, I saw this movie, The Rover, with this kid named Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have heard of him. He's pretty good.
I heard that he's really good in that movie.
He's good in that movie.
No, he is. I was very, not having seen, the only thing I'd ever seen him in, well, other than the Harry Potter Goblet of Fire, was a movie called Bel Ami, which was really bad.
Oh, yeah.
No, or at least really boring, at least.
Most of the things I've seen him in outside of Twilight, which I don't even, that's more of just like, yep, I signed on for these, here we go. But, like, he's been a solid presence as an actor. Like,
what was the one where he's just driving in a limo where, like, the end of the world?
Cosmopolis.
I didn't see that.
That's another one that he's quite good in.
Mm. Yeah, I hear good things.
The Rover, because that was, because David Michaud's preview. Yeah, that was right. Yeah, Joel Edgerton co-wrote the story on The Rover. Like, yeah, because he's a writer as well. And he previously starred in David Michaud's other movie, Animal Kingdom. Yeah. Just connecting the dots on the Joel Edgerton.
Yeah, we just Cloud Atlas that one.
That's right. Moving on, we brought this up earlier, but we lost a couple screen icons this week. The wonderful Robin Williams and Golden Age star Lauren Bacall. Can everyone name some favorite films from each? Jason has Good Morning Vietnam. Tyler has I Love Bacall in Written on the Wind, classic melodrama. I loved Williams in Jumanji and Mrs. Doubtfire, but his most underrated performance was 1 Hour Photo. And Philip has Howl's Moving Castle and Misery for Bacall. I think Williams' performance was the best thing about Good Will Hunting. Also, Night at the Museum and Robots, making Robots a movie that I just now remembered existed.
Yeah.
And lastly, we asked, what movies has everyone seen lately, and what do they think? Eric writes, What If was a lot of fun. Very sweet film story filled with the complexities of life and ridiculous senses of humor.
I haven't seen that yet. David, have you seen What If? The Daniel Radcliffe?
Radcliffe, yeah.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
I hear it's like a modern age, like, going through whatever. But I'm curious about it.
Oh, it's one of those, Abe? It's one of those modern age going through whatever?
Yeah.
It's been a while. You had one of those.
Not like one of those older ones.
It's not, yeah, it's definitely not one of those older ones. Friend of the show, Mark Hoban writes, I'm in the theater watching What If right now. That's as lately as it gets. Jason writes, quit
texting them in the movie, dude.
It's okay. That little pop-up with the M&Ms didn't show up yet. Jason writes, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for 2014 was okay, and Hercules was a fun action movie. And lastly, Philip writes, About a Boy and Super 8. I love them both. I appreciate Super 8 a lot more than the first time having seen it and having recently rewatched The Goonies. The child acting was much better than the line shouting in Goonies.
Monster Squad for life. Okay, so let's move on now. Let's get to our questions here. We ask questions, you give us answers. So now you ask us questions, and we'll give you answers. Jason asks, what do you think of The Rock being the villain in Expendables 4? My first reaction to that is I don't care at all. But given that Expendables 3 is, like, failing at the box office, and we love The Rock, we love Wayne, the D is silent, The Rock Johnson.
Thank you. Yes.
I mean, he seems to have been franchise Viagra for other series, such as the Fast and Furious series, for example. So, if they put him in Expendables, that's something that they've done.
I honestly didn't think that there was going to be an Expendables 4, so I hope this is
We don't know that there's going to be Expendables 4, because this one's currently failing, so who knows.
It's
nice to wish things, though. yeah.
Philip asks us, will Guardians' August success change the way people in studios look at the summer releases? Or is it more of an outlier? That's a great question, Philip.
I don't think it's an outlier. I think Marvel's done a very good job this year of having movies not released on the traditional start dates for giant epic blockbusters, because you have Captain America at the beginning of April, and now you have Guardians of the Galaxy at the beginning of August. None of these movies came out in May, June, July, but they happen to be some of the biggest movies of the year in months that are not known for having those kind of movies, so...
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of, like, what friend of the show Scott Madison was saying. He's like, he just hopes that there's good movies that get put out in all months of the year, because they shouldn't just be strictly put into, like, categories of summer blockbuster or Oscar bait movies. It's, just, like,
well, it's not even about good. Like, this question is just more about movies that have the potential to be successful. Yeah, I mean, you can put Transformers out in August 15th, and maybe that probably would have been made the same amount of money. We don't know, because they don't test it very often, and Marvel's done that. Marvel's like, you know what? We got some moves we can make. Let's try it. And they've succeeded. Does that mean every other movie is going to succeed in that way? Not necessarily, but I'd like to think that there's more potential to kind of broaden the horizons of when these big movies get released. So we'll see. Fast and Furious started that too. Fast and Furious was doing that in April before Marvel was.
Before it was cool, they were the hipsters.
Before it was cool, yeah, they were the hipsters in the studio world. Eric asks, Guardians is effectively launching the outer space segment of the Marvel movie universe in the same way Iron Man launched the Avengers universe. Please compare these two movies as the foundations for more to come.
Feels like I have to write an essay on this.
Could, but I mean, the best way to look at it, I guess, is Guardians, because it's set in outer space and it introduces you to many different planets and many different types of alien races and different species and whatnot, it has potential to do pretty much anything, granted it exists in, you know, worlds that have been explored in the comics or what have you. But because Guardians is such an obscure property, I would say any follow-up to Guardians that's closely associated to both that and the fact that it's a Marvel movie could potentially be a successful movement towards expanding a whole other universe that's outside of the realm of Tony Stark and the gang. So plenty of potential there, I guess, as long as people are still interested in this thing. Especially when you have new Star Wars movies that are going to start to come out on a yearly basis next year.
It's going to be the crossover?
Well, no, it's just more of...
Guardians and Star Wars. That'd be great.
It's just more of... I mean, they're both Disney. But it's more of... We're going to see a lot of kind of space operas happening in the very near future. I mean, it started now with Guardians. I mean, it started with Star Trek or even Serenity, if you want to go back. I mean, it's never really left. It's just more of we're getting more of that now, it seems. So.
And basically what I'm... I think that it just bridges the gap between what they can expand on in the future as well. I mean, you kind of saw in the Avengers as well, where they see this other planet or these other interstellar planets, and now they have to make adjustments for it. And Captain America 2 addresses that. Guardians is now going even farther into the reaches of space, where now you have a potential for all these other Marvel properties to come through and just make a cameo appearance or just have their own movie. And it's just kind of expanding it. I mean, it literally is a Marvel universe.
Thank you. And with comparing that to Iron Man was made... I mean, Iron Man and Guardians are both the biggest risks that Marvel's, you know, kind of made in terms of kind of big movies that are coming out. And Iron Man, while the idea maybe was like, someday maybe we can get these guys all together, Iron Man more functioned as a, hey, let's put this movie out there and see if it works, and it happened to, and let's close it on a Sam Jackson scene where we announce the potential. And while I think Guardians is a more successful movie overall than Iron Man is, I'd still say Iron Man's, you know, quite good and certainly paved the way for to get up to this point with Guardians, with the 10th movie in these Marvel movies. So, I mean, they're good foundation layers, that's for sure. They're good foundations, that's for sure.
Indeed. Philip, 2 cents?
What?
Philip. David, 2 cents?
I haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
There you go.
Oh, no worries. Yeah.
That's my 2 cents.
There you go.
And right. My name is definitely not Phil.
Yeah,
my apologies.
Reading a question.
It's okay.
Jason asks us, what is your favorite Phase 2 Marvel Cinematic Universe film so far?
Guardians.
I think we answered this, yeah.
When we ranked the movies last Guardian. Week or 2 weeks ago, yeah, we were kind of on Guardians. So Guardians. It's pretty simple, I would say. Anyway, moving on. Philip has, who would win in a political debate between Hodor and Groot? Well, Hodor only says Hodor, and Groot says I am Groot. So I think the three words beats the one word. So there you go.
There you go. Settled.
Yeah, settled that one. All right, so let's move on now. Let's get to our, that was on the feedback, by the way.
Feedback.
Abe, what time is it now, Abe?
Aaron, I believe that it's time for games. That was beautiful this week, sir.
I thought so. Taylor Swift composed that, actually, in her cameo. In the
Oh, wow.
We didn't talk about her at all, by the way, but she was fine. She didn't do anything bad.
I'm glad that she had a very, very, very minor role.
I have nothing against Swift. She hasn't done anything to me.
Okay. This game that I have for you guys this week is called The Gaver. Fast sense of giver.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to be asking you guys...
What if the giver was gay?
No. Gaver. G-A-V-E-R.
Let me stop you really quick, Abe.
Yeah.
We had a new entry on the favorite performances by Robin Williams question, and we have David has World According to Garp, and for Lauren Bacall, Key Largo. So there you go.
Very good.
Yeah. Continue on with games.
So these questions are essentially just trivia questions about something that a movie character has given to another movie character. All you have to do is buzz in with your name and say the title of the movie. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's go.
So to be clear, you're going to, what kind of question are you going to read?
I'm going to be reading trivia questions.
You're going to be reading, and to buzz in, I'll be like, Aaron, and then I'll say whatever I think the answer is.
Yes.
And if I wanted to buzz in, I'd say, Philip.
Definitely.
No, definitely not. David. Sorry about that again.
It's okay.
If you know the answer beforehand, just feel free to buzz in. I don't have to finish reading the question.
Got it.
Okay. Christian Bale gave a serious acting to Jared Leto in this movie.
Aaron. American Psycho.
That's correct.
That's less trivia. It's more like a thing that happened. But go on.
This title character gives one of the best dance sequences during a rally ever. Also, vote for Pedro.
David. Napoleon Dynamite?
That is correct.
Okay.
Next one here. This crew probably gave Andy Garcia so many ulcers and headaches after robbing his casino vault in this movie.
Aaron. Ocean's 11.
That is correct.
I was going to say 12 to be clever, but I decided not to do that.
That'd be wrong, and then I'd give it.
I don't know. You might have got ulcers in between 11 and 12. And then
all right.
Who gets ulcers during the heist?
It's a good point.
Okay.
All right. Jim Carrey gave millions of fans so much joy and comfort in this movie, where he wasn't even aware he was being filmed.
David. The Truman Show.
That's correct. Dead heat here, guys. Next one. All that Rod Tidwell wants is to give him a bigger contract and show him the Aaron.
Oh, Jerry Maguire.
That's correct. Next one.
In Rod we trust, by the way.
This title character gives great advice when he states, "Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it."
Aaron. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That is correct. Two more. Leonardo DiCaprio gives a government agent a good chase before finally deciding to help the agency David.
Catch Me If You Can.
That is correct.
I was that second mouse, by the way. Just saying.
That's a good story. Last one. This mechanical cleaning hero helps give life on Earth a second shot.
David. Wally.
That is correct. Let me count this up here.
It's close.
I think we're tied.
Might be.
Yeah, it is tied 4-4.
You have that classic tiebreaker you're always hiding up your sleeve?
Okay, yeah. So the classic tiebreaker is you must say...
Go on.
You must say... you have to give me your best Good Morning Vietnam in Robin Williams' voice.
Okay.
I forfeit.
What?! Come on, David, you could do this.
Means I won.
I don't think my neighbors would appreciate it. I'd probably scare my cat. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna give this one to David anyway.
What? What?
Because I called him Philip.
Unprecedented.
What do I get?
A pat on the back.
All right.
You get to come back to the podcast eventually.
Thank God.
All right, and that was James, the Gaver.
Thank you. Well prepared as always. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are new movies coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, or streaming this week, and we've got a lot of things here. A lot of TV actually. First up, we have The Amazing Spider-Man, duh.
Some scenes are okay.
You know what? I liked it, so there. I enjoyed Spider-Man, too. Only Lovers Left Alive, which David and I saw together, actually.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, fantastic film. Still in my top five of the year. Let's see, Fading Gigolo. This is, I think I talked about this movie.
You brought this one up, yeah.
Yeah, this is a John Turturro-directed film with him and Woody Allen. As the obvious combo of pimp and gigolo, and a fitting follow-up to Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. We have The Quiet Ones. This is a Jared Harris starring horror movie that was probably terrible, so I'll just go with that. Then we got a lot of TV stuff. We have Boardwalk Empire Season 4, Revolution Season 2, the last season, it was canceled, Community Season 5, which was back on track for Community, The Good Wife, Parks and Recreation, it's like the sixth season, I think, The Mindy Project, the second season, and then like the TV movie of Rosemary's Baby, or like miniseries with Zoe Saldana, which was probably terrible.
That was a TV miniseries?
Yeah, it came out like a couple months ago. It was on.
Interesting.
And lastly, on Criterion this week, just because I want to mention it, E Tu Mama Tambien comes out on Criterion Blu-ray release. It's like throwing that one out there because that's just a good movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of stuff hitting the streets this week, and I, so, yeah, go for it.
They're also putting the Blu-ray Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down comes out this week.
Cool.
On Criterion.
Oh, nice.
The Almodovar.
Oh, yeah. I forgot what other Criterions are coming out this week. There's always a couple. I think that's it for that. Let's move on now. We're going to talk about next week. Next week, we're going over Frank Miller's Sin City, : A Dame to Kill For, the 9-year follow-up to Sin City, from directors Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller, because those credits are needed. And, that's what we're going to talk about next week. We'll see how that goes. With that said, David, what should people go see in theaters now, if you had to name a movie?
Oh, man. You put me on the spot. I'm trying to think, what is coming, what is out? I liked Get On Up.
I liked, you and I both liked that quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, that was probably the last thing. And then there's one coming, a small movie that's coming out in, it'll be a platform release in the next few weeks, called Love is Strange.
Oh, I saw that too, yeah.
John Lithgow and Alfred Molina and Marissa Tomei. I thought that was also a wonderful movie.
I completely agree with you. I really enjoyed that movie, yeah. Abe, any movies people, which people could go see now?
I think people should go see Boyhood. I saw that again for a second time.
Ooh.
Just last week, and I enjoyed it immensely again.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see it a second time. I haven't got around to it yet. I am going to say Frank, if you can find it. That's the Michael Fassbender film. And if you can't see Frank, go see Lucy. Why not? Because it's weird. I support weirdness. So there. With that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodazeek.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at whyisitblue.com for all my Blu-ray reviews. Also, you can find me on Twitter at @AaronsPS4. Abe?
You find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag The Last of Us?
Remastered?
Maybe.
David, where can people find more of your work?
You can find my podcast, Battleship Pretension, and my podcast, Hey Watch This, which is the TV one, and a bunch of other podcasts at BattleshipPretension.com. That's also where you can find all the movie reviews that I write and other people write, including Get On Up and, I don't know, Only Lovers Left Alive and The Giver, if you care to read that one. And you can follow me on Twitter. So that's all at BattleshipPretension.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at ThePretension.
Great. And you can, of course, find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Stitcher, as well as at hhwlod.com. That is the podcast network that hosts our show, along with other shows, including the Walking Dead TV podcast, the Ichapod Crane cast, which, of course, finds myself and friends of the show, Brandon and Maxwell, talking about new episodes of Sleepy Hollow, starting up again soon, and other fun shows about comics and TV and fun stuff like that.
You can find our episodes over at outnow.podomatic.com, as well as soundcloud.com/outnowpodcast.
Feel free to follow or to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on The Giver, on the book that you read and maybe loved and maybe did not like the movie. So let us know. We want to know. I want to hear the other thoughts on. I'm curious what the other thoughts on The Giver are out there.
Interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And of course, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. And feel free to use our voicemail line, 972-798-3830. Express yourself vocally about The Giver or whatever else
Express
you want to
Express yourself.
Exactly. That's what I was going for on that one. Too bad I'm not in the show on that song, though. No, stupid. But yeah, with all that out of the way, David Bax, thank you very much for joining
us
on the podcast
David.
Today.
Thank you, winner of the game.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
No, very happy to have you on. We'll be sure to have you back at some point. Maybe before Tyler, maybe not. Who knows? We'll never know with this. but yeah, with all that out of the way, that's gonna do it. Sin City next week, so until next time, so long
and goodbye.
My name is Tony. I'm carrying the wheel. Thanks for all you've shown us. This is how we feel. Come sit next to me, pour yourself some tea, just like
this week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking, I've totally blanked on the movie.
The Giver, you f***ing f***. All right, you ready, Abe?
I'm guessing you were just drinking something right then and there.
I was actually swallowing a jujube, but that's close.
Okay. All right. Ready.
Okay. But yeah, Goldfinger, it has all this stuff I don't like that he essentially, like, the Pussy Galore storyline. And I understand you have to, like, put on, like, your context goggles and watch it in the context of the time. But essentially, Pussy Galore is a potential mass murderer, and then James Bond rapes her, and then he rapes her so well. He rapes her so well, apparently, that she becomes a good guy. Now, I know, like, that's not what it's supposed to literally be, but the scene leading up to James Bond bedding Pussy Galore, if made today, is a rape scene. Like, she keeps trying to leave, and then he keeps, like, he makes her go into this barn, she keeps trying to leave, he, like, keeps grabbing her by the arm and pulling her back in, and then they fight, and then he holds her wrists down on a bale of hay, and then fade to black, and then she's a good guy after that. It's really uncomfortable to me. And also it's dumb that the bad guy essentially had, apparently had contractors come in to install this, like, model of Fort Knox on, like, this pneumatic thing that would rise out of the floor just so he could explain to the gangsters what his plan is, and then he immediately kills all the gangsters after he's explained what the plan is. It doesn't make any sense at all.
I feel like Auric Goldfinger has actually made that model himself. Like, that was one of his hobbies that he had. And
but did he go underneath his home and install that huge pneumatic, like, that dry, like, you know, the...
No,
the...
Odd Job's handiwork. He is actually a home improvement agent person. That's his pastime.
Oh! So
in Japan, he was an engineer.
Yes.
Right?
Very, yeah, of course. That's how he has that hat. He built that in the lab.
Although, actually, the actor is Japanese, but I think the character is supposed to be Korean. I think there was a line of dialogue about that. Not important.